Hi, and welcome to Practically Speaking. My name is Lane Jones, and I'm your host for this informal discussion with the management team of North Point Ministries. Our hope is that we can offer practical suggestions to the challenges of leading a relevant local church in today's culture. This segment begins a series on the seven practices of effective ministry. These form the basic operating system for how we do ministry here at North Point. The first of those seven practices is clarify the win. And today we're going to discuss the importance of providing a clear picture of success for your team. I'm joined today by Andy Stanley. Andy, a few years ago, developing a mission statement was just sort of all the rage, both in business and in churches all over America. But you know, even with these carefully worded mission statements and purpose statements, it just doesn't seem the average church has really changed that much over the past, say, 15 years.
No, and it's interesting because you're right. Every time you go to a church, somewhere on the wall or on their letterhead, there's some sort of mission statement. One of the things that we ask leaders all the time is what's written on the wall happening down the hall? In other words, is there a connection between what you've determined as your mission and what's actually taking place? And one of the reasons that I'm excited about this discussion is we're going to talk about how do you take those wonderful, lofty statements and drive it down into the heart and into the really the activity, the ministry activity of an organization, because so oftentimes there is a huge, huge disconnect between what is, you know, probably a good mission statement and what actually takes place in the ministry.
What do you think is the reason for that disconnect just out there in the average church?
Well, I think one of the big reasons is those mission statements are developed in a vacuum. It's a bunch of smart people sitting around in a room that come up with, you know, whatever they think the mission is, and then everybody goes back to work. And if there's not a process of taking the mission statement or the mission and vision of an organization and driving it through every single level, and that's what we're going to talk about, if there's not a process of driving it through every level, everybody goes back to work, they do what they have been doing, they do what they know how to do, and again, there's a disconnect. And so at some point along the way, leaders in a church have to move beyond simply the statement on the wall and ask the question, how do we make this very, very ministry specific for every aspect of our organization? And it's a very time-consuming process, but the payoff is huge.
Today also joining us is Reggie Joyner. He is our Director of Family Ministry, and Reggie has done a great job in crafting a lot of the statements in these seven practices. And Reggie, specifically the one today, I think is one that really drives to the heart of the matter of really determining what success is.
Yeah, you know, when you think about, you know, Andy and Lane, how many years we've spent in ministry, and most of us have grown up in organizations where someone, you know, without letting us know, defined success in some type of term. And we grew up in churches, we would get on elevators with other pastors, and they would, you know, pull out their stat sheets and their scorecards, and they would ask you how many people you had baptized or how many people were showing up in Sunday school, or they would ask you, you know, what your budget was like.
Or they'd say, what you're running.
Yeah, what you're running.
Yeah.
What you're running.
And basically,
yeah.
And when you think about that, everybody uses something to determine a win. But the problem is most of the people in our organization aren't on the same page when it comes to the win. And we know that most of those scorecards don't really define the win in terms of what we really feel like intuitively we're after in ministry.
And even they don't even line up with what they say their own mission is. I mean, I've never seen a mission statement that said our mission is to have more money this week than we had last week. Our mission is to simply have more people. Again, there's a disconnect between that and what's on the wall.
But the point is that most staffs, when they hear those questions or they hear those statements, they begin to turn their energy, turn their emotion toward making those things happen, because it is in every one of us to win. We all want to win.
Right.
And so I think one of the greatest things that we can do is talk about what this phrase means, clarify the win, because the better we can do this in our organization, the better we can define what is important at every level of the organization, the easier it will be to keep everyone on the same page.
Going back to what you just said, too, it's so important, Reggie. When our leaders ask the same questions over and over, what that does to employees in an organization, that really sets the direction. I mean, if every day I walk in and I ask the same three questions, eventually you realize, hey, that's what's important to Andy. And if the questions I ask over and over and over are not connected to the mission statement, then what happens in the ministry becomes more of something that's in alignment with my questions than the mission. But that's because we don't generally do what we're talking about today, and that is drive the question and drive the mission down through the different levels of the organization and then begin to ask questions that coincide with the mission rather than just the scorecard you talked about.
And here's what I think, Lane, and see if you agree. the only reason we're not asking the right questions is because we haven't sat down in a room and spent time crafting the right questions to ask.
Exactly.
So that we are consistent about making sure that everyone understands what a win is. We've got to remember, it's in every person who works in your church, it's in every person on your staff to be a winner. They want to win. They want to do the things that you want them to do, but we have to be intentional about clarifying the win and making sure we're defining what success is.
Right, because I think what you're saying is so true, that if you're going to hire even remotely qualified people, they're going to get out there and they're going to fight and they're going to try and they're going to do everything they can to win. And sometimes they're going to be successful going down a road we don't even want them to go down, because there is something in them that makes them want to be successful and makes them want to win.
And let me make one other suggestion. And Andy, I would love to hear what you think about this. Is it not true that in every organization outside the church world, success typically is easier to see and to measure? And you know in these other organizations, because there's a certain kind of built-in accountability if they've hit the mark or not.
Yeah, well, they're economically driven. I mean, every company in the world wants to make more money than they made last quarter, and they may say the issue is customer service, but customer service is a way to make more money, and there's nothing wrong with that. But again, the win is clear. You come into church world, and it gets fuzzy, and consequently, like you said, Lane, everybody's busy. Everybody's working towards some goal. They're moving towards some finish line. But if we haven't clarified the win beyond simply a statement, a general mission statement for the entire organization, it's impossible to focus and channel the energy of the people who are in our organizations.
And it's amazing how hard people end up working in order to get their event on the calendar first, to get their event in the budget, there becomes this battle then,
right?
You know, instead of anything moving in the same direction, they're competing against one another, and then not only do the wrong things get accomplished, even sometimes those things become even destructive with staff. We've already sort of talked about this a little bit, but specifically, Reggie, what happens when you don't clarify the win?
Well, when you don't clarify the win, as long as the win is unclear, you force your team to guess what a win looks like. I'm absolutely convinced that most volunteers want to do what you want them to do. I mean, there's something in them that wants to be a part of mm-hmm. something that is bigger than themselves. There's something in them that wants to win. And when you're not clear about the win, they're going to scramble out there and they're going to try to come up with a win because they want to win. And as long as the win is unclear, you're forcing them to chart their own course or follow whoever seems to have the best plan.
I remember in traditional churches that I've worked in before, you'd always have a really, really good, real hot shot teacher. And so in the hot shot teacher's master teacher class, a win was more people than you had the week before.
Mm-hmm.
If they started in the classroom, then you gave them the whole assembly room, then you gave them the fellowship hall. Well, in their mind, they're winning, they're winning, they're winning. Meanwhile, the education director is running out of space. He can't get other people to participate in the other programs happening at the same time. So a win for one was a loss for the other, and there's built-in tension. And as you mentioned earlier, now we're competing for resources and space. So, you know, when the win isn't clarified and, again, forced down through the organization, every leader in the organization will define a win themselves and will chase it. And if they're good leaders, they will accomplish it, oftentimes to the detriment of the entire organization.
For some volunteers, if they go for a very long time not feeling like they're winning, they'll give up. They'll quit. And part of the reason that we have such a volunteer hole in many of our churches is we've had people that have signed up to do things,
yep.
but over a period of time, they haven't felt like they were winning. And so they quit.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the reason they don't feel like they're winning is because we have allowed them to define what a win is, and they're not even able to meet their own expectations.
Yeah.
We're thrilled, but unfortunately a win for many church leaders is, hey, the teacher showed up. It was a win. There was a teacher in every classroom. We won.
Right.
Well, that's no goal.
Absolutely.
And that certainly doesn't motivate anybody.
Right.
But again, if we don't spend the time clarifying the win gets defined by everybody in leadership, and suddenly there's competition again for resources, for space, and for people.
Yeah, and usually we're talking about clarifying the win in the context so that the average volunteer at the average rank and file understands what the win is. But there's a unique kind of volunteer who has a leadership position. And if this ever is true, it's especially true for those, because leaders really are wired to win, and they're going to win, and they're going to figure out how to win. And if you don't tell them what a win is, they're going to start a class, they're going to create a ministry, they're going to go down a road and instantly sabotage. the church and taking a direction you never wanted it to go.
They'll introduce new ideas and feel good about it.
Yeah.
And then there's conflict.
Yeah, and then you have to explain why you're killing a good thing.
Yeah, and it's working.
Yeah.
Because you have good leadership.
Exactly.
Leading in the wrong direction.
Okay, as we've talked a lot about the challenges that when we don't clarify the when. Reggie, what are some of the advantages that we get when we clarify the when?
Here's what I think, and I think it's significant that the two of you are in here because there are three other people that we know made up the leadership team that started North Point Community Church, and we have said over and over and over again, and people look at us when we started the church and think, well, you had an advantage because you had a blank page. We all know there are a lot of churches who started with a blank page, and we didn't feel like that was the advantage. We felt like the advantage was we spent enough time to make sure that we were all on the same page.
Right.
The same page gave us a greater advantage than ever having a blank page. And there's this idea of alignment that is so, so important. I know, you know, Andy, you've written about it in a couple of your books. It is just a critical issue for any staff to stay aligned going in the same direction.
And when the when is clear, it's just a lot easier to keep everybody in alignment, both in terms of their heart and their hands.
And along with keeping people on the same page, you keep the right people in the organization and you keep the wrong people from getting in the organization. I remember countless times at the beginning of our organization where, Andy, you would stand up and you would speak and you would paint a picture of what the win is for us, because you wanted everyone in the congregation, the new people who were starting to sign on with this idea, you wanted them to know this is the vision, and if that's not the picture you're buying into, then maybe you don't need to be here.
And we would even say that.
Yeah.
And people thought I was rude and I'd always get negative comments, but, you know, I'd say, look, I don't want to build buildings and create space for you if you're not really on board with what we're doing. If you're going to heaven anyway, you know, it's okay to go somewhere else to church. And I wasn't mean. And it's true, because everybody listening to this recording knows what happens when a strong leader with a different vision or with, a different agenda gets into an organization. And one of the great advantages of clarifying the when is that it quickly roots out or surfaces the people who have a different agenda, because it's very clear when they're on board, it's very clear when they're not. But if there's a lot of gray, if the vision or the mission statement is so broad in general, you know, we're here to glorify God by blah, 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 well, good grief, you can do a lot of things and fit within that context. So the more specific it is, the clearer the win is, the easier it is for those of us who are in leadership to identify well-meaning people who just aren't a fit.
Because everyone shows up every week holding in their mind a picture of what they want your church to be.
That's for sure.
Yeah. And as long as they have their picture in their hand and you haven't clarified it or changed the picture, they think their duty, their responsibility, is to conform your church to the image of their picture.
Right. And if you just listen, you would understand that they're right. if you'll just listen.
Yeah.
Now, there's a financial advantage to this as well. Tell us about that, Reggie.
It's really simple. If you know what the win is, you know what to spend your money on. And as long as we're making sure that we're clarifying the win, everyone in every department, in every ministry, knows how we spend money and why we spend money.
And our volunteers see that as well. And they understand, again, where their money is going. And this is a huge, huge advantage. And we've seen examples here, too, where we've not clearly communicated in some pockets in the past why we're doing what we're doing. And people immediately say, why would you spend, you know, so much money on X? And you know, we want to get upset and say, don't you get it? But, well, they didn't get it because we didn't explain it. But the clearer the win, the more focused we are with our resources, and you just get more bang for your buck in ministry.
And early on, that was really important, because early on, there were a lot more opportunities than necessarily there was, you know, money to fund them.
We had a blank page, but we didn't have a blank check.
I didn't know that had changed, Lane. There still seem to be way more opportunities than money.
That's
but
true.
The money goes further
right.
when it's focused, and focus follows clarifying the win. One thing that every church leader eventually discovers is that money follows vision. It really doesn't follow need the way it follows vision. And the clearer the vision, the more generous people become, because people love to give to something that wins, but you've got to clarify the win to clarify for the people who are giving where their money's going and why your ministry or church is a good investment.
And actually, when you think about budgeting and money and all those issues, and you look at the normal things that happen in a typical staff, where staffs begin to compete for finances, they begin to compete for resources, clarifying the win solves a lot of those problems. Because when everyone understands what the general win is, when they understand the big picture, then one person isn't going to lose for the sake of another one winning. When everyone understands what the general win is, again, it puts everyone on the same page, and everyone gets excited when another ministry wins, and they understand how money is being spent.
Yep. And generally, you avoid the misunderstanding between departments, because if you've clarified the win for me, and yet it's clear to me what the win is in your department, then as I look at your budget dollars, I understand. But if I'm not sure what you're doing over there and you're not sure what I'm doing, then again, I don't have a context for rightly evaluating how much money you received or how much money I received. And then in those situations where every church faces, where you have to reallocate resources, that all of a sudden this year we're not going to fund, you know, this program as much as we funded it last year, because we're going to double fund another program. As long as the win is clear, the average mature staff member can roll with that.
In a lot of traditional church models that we see, it seems like every fall is kind of the gear it back up and get it going. But this whole idea of clarify the win really has an impact on the momentum of the church, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think that if you were to look at North Point, and I think God has just been really good to us in so many ways. And you know, He's been good to us financially. He has been good to us with our volunteer force. But I think the reason people give, I think the reason people invest and do what they do is because they're motivated. I mean, when people are winning, it's contagious. When people are winning, it's emotional. When people are winning, there is just an energy that happens, and you feel it, because when you show up for a service, when you show up for a special event, and it works, and you know it works, and lives are changed, people just get involved. And here's the thing about a win that I think is very important to remember. We have all experienced this to a degree when we played athletics or sports. Mm-hmm. We know that a team that loses over and over and over and over can get a defeated mentality,
yep.
And they can just get caught up in the habit of losing. I have actually known coaches, and I've seen this happen in the basketball world with my daughter, who would not allow a young team to play too many teams that were out of their league, because he didn't want them to get used to losing. He
right.
wanted them to get used to winning.
Right.
And there is just a contagious thing that takes place.
Yep, and you just can't build momentum if everybody isn't sure where the organization's going. In terms of the overall organization, children's ministry, student ministry, groups ministry, and again, as we're going to get into some specifics here, as you drill down on that, you're able to create momentum simply by clarifying the win.
People work harder, they're less negative, they trust more, and they give more.
Yep.
Okay, guys, so now, practically speaking then, how do you clarify the win? What are the steps that are involved?
I think we have identified four simple steps to help our departments and to help our leaders and staffs consistently clarify the win. Number one, we want them to sum up the win in a simple phrase. Number two, to keep the win as specific as possible. And number three, to build into their environment ways to restate the win frequently and creatively. And then number four, to continue to meet to clarify the win at every level.
And that, I think, is where there's a breakdown oftentimes. Again, there's that initial meeting where we're going to come up with a cool phrase and put it on the wall, and then we just all go back to work. So let's unpack all four of those, because I think there's a lot to say about each of them. And I think that's oftentimes where there's a breakdown. That, again, we have the meeting, everybody's excited, we script it out, we write it out, we put it on a plaque, and then we just all go back to work.
Well, let's dig down on these then, on these four. Okay, Reggie, when you talk about summing up the win in a simple phrase, what's involved in that?
Well, again, it's back to the idea that people need a scorecard, or they need a scoreboard, they need something to look at. And we actually, in a room, will have a creative board, and we'll say, you know, when this event is over, when this production is done, what do we want people to walk away and do? What do we want that to look like? What is the win? And we will craft a phrase so that everyone knows this is the goal of this event. We're pouring all this money, all of this time, all of this energy, all of this talent into this event because we want this to happen.
And the other way we ask it sometimes is, what do we want to look back on? You know, we wake up Thursday morning after the big Wednesday night event. What is it specifically we want to look back on? What's the point of celebration? What lets us know we really got it done? And for some people, this seems like an unimportant exercise because it's just a lot of thinking. It's crafting a statement. And yet at the same time, when you're done and you know this is the win for this event, or this is the win for this program, this is the win for this specific camp, what it does for the momentum, it's just unbelievable.
For example, in our high school program, we do a thing on Sunday afternoons called Inside Out. Inside Out is designed so that students can show up and be discipled, so that they can actually have a dynamic experience in a small group context. Once you have put up on a board in a room, that's what Inside Out is all about.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone in the organization knows this is really about small group happening and life changing the context of small group. Then everyone in that room who's doing their job understands how their job connects to that win.
And Reggie, you remember two people would come up to us and say, you know, my son brought a friend to Inside Out, and he wasn't a Christian, and they would be frustrated because we didn't present the gospel. Well, that wasn't the win for that event. We have other events that are specifically evangelism driven, and we decided up front we're not going to dilute the win for Sunday afternoon for the sake of evangelism. That wasn't what that environment was created for. Again, clarifying the win then gives our student leadership the courage to say to a well-meaning mom, you know something, we're not going to change this program.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the wins for one of our other student environments is that specifically. So again, clarifying the win, it creates momentum and it gives us answers to some great questions when people don't quite understand why we do what we do.
For example, the lady who's back in the kitchen, she knows that one of her goals is to create such a great atmosphere that kids will hang and continue to connect with her small group leaders and connect with each other. When the master teacher is communicating, he's thinking not about what he's saying. He's thinking about setting them up so when they go into the room after his message,
yep,
they'll have a great dialogue and a great discussion.
And he doesn't measure his success by how well he spoke.
That's right.
He measures his success by how well he set the small group leader up for success. And it's that same, and Reggie, you and I were both in student ministry for so many years. When we clarify the win for our Sunday afternoon program Inside Out, we realize that if 400 high school kids show up, and in the master teacher time, 400 kids participate, but if afterwards only 200 stay for small group, it wasn't a win. Now, the temptation is to think, good grief, we had 400 high school kids there, and there would be a temptation to celebrate the numbers. But once we clarified the win, we were able to sit down after some of those big meetings and say, we still have work to do. It was a great event numerically. We didn't accomplish what we set out to accomplish.
And they sit for hours and hours and hours, you know, evaluating, okay, did they connect in small groups? What was the small group dynamic like? Because the bottom line was, if students participated in an effective small group, we won. If they did not, we didn't.
Right, and it was that simple.
Yeah.
And it channeled the momentum, the energy. It changed the kind of small group leader you look for. And it allows us to constantly tweak that program to move more and more students into small group.
And what we have just described is a win for the Inside Out program, the small group context of our student ministry. We have another program called Kid Stuff, for example. Kid Stuff was designed to put parents and kids together in a shared experience environment. Again, the win for us are parents and children together having a shared experience and going home and dialoguing about their faith.
That's the win.
That's the win.
Yep.
And the thing is, if parents don't show up, we have a big sign that sits over the wall that says no drop-offs. Adults are not allowed to drop off their kids.
They get frustrated about that.
They do. And the reason we do that is because we want parents to assume a responsibility of being the spiritual leader in their homes.
That's the win.
Yeah.
For our worship services, over and over, the win that we celebrate is when somebody in our church brings an unbeliever who leaves still not believing, but says, I want to come back next week. That's the win. I mean, when we celebrate Sunday morning worship, regardless of the numbers, the music was cool, the sermon was fine, you know, all that stuff, those stories to us, that's the bullseye. We created an environment where an unbeliever came, didn't, you know, hook, line, and sinker buy the whole thing. I mean, nobody's going to do that in a week, but said, you know what, that was so relevant to my life. I want to come back next week. That's the win.
Everything we've said so far defines a win in the terms of life change.
Right.
We're talking about a student in a small group. We're talking about a parent and their son or daughter. We're talking about an unbeliever. And in every one of these instances, something has changed. See, we've bought into a myth, and the myth is that we can't really evaluate or measure life change. And there are ways to measure it. And we've got to create ways that we can critique ourselves to make sure that what we're doing is effective.
And that really brings us to the second step in creating the win or defining the win for any individual department or program. You know, the mission statement of our church is to lead people into a growing relationship with Jesus Christ. But that's not specific enough for any department in the church. It's just not enough. And yet at the same time, as you've listened to us list some of these wins, you can see how life change within the context of a student small group, connecting parents and kids, an unbeliever wanting to come back, all of that, you know, falls specifically under the canopy of leading people into a growing relationship with Jesus Christ. But we have focused that mission statement down to specific applications in specific departments. And again, as you fine-tune and clarify the win, and it all falls underneath the canopy of the larger mission statement, then you've got synergy. And again, unbelievable things begin to happen.
So a mission statement can be general enough to give you a compass or a direction that you want to head in. But when you clarify the win, you've put a dot on the map that is the destination that you're headed toward.
And maybe you've heard this business statement before. If you aim at nothing, you'll hit it every time. You know, there are a lot of churches that claim to reach more people every year. They're claiming to reach more people every year. But according to national statistics, the church is rapidly declining in attendance. It's losing its influence. We have seen that. And the fact is, a lot of churches are just not clear about what they're aiming at. And you know, Ron Blue has been sort of a mentor to a lot of us. And I know, Andy, he's you know, been in your life in incredible ways. And he made a statement early on that I'll never forget in one of the meetings we had with him, when he said, "You can't manage what you can't measure." Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do remember that, Reggie. And again, you can't measure leading people into a growing relationship with Jesus Christ if that's as far as your measurement tools go. It's just too general. But if the goal of Inside Out is connecting students in small group, we can measure that. If the goal is making sure parents and kids show up together, we can measure our effectiveness there. So again, the only way to develop tools of measurement, or I should say the right tools of measurement, is to clarify the win. If you don't, we all fall back on how much money came in, how many people showed up. And that is not always mission critical.
I think, Reggie, that, again, as important as it is to clarify, you've done such a great job in family ministry of finding some great ways to keep that win out in front of people, which is really step number three, that we find ways to restate that win creatively and frequently.
Yeah, because if people don't see it constantly, they have a tendency over time, with wear and tear on the organization, to drift away from what's really important. You know, we've done a number of things. We post it on creative boards and in planning rooms as a constant reminder of what they're trying to accomplish. Andy mentioned earlier, we ask strategic questions. Maybe you ought to have three questions that you just tuck away in the back of your mind that you use over and over again, because over time, people will start assuming what's important based on the questions you're asking. And, you know, a lot of times in our services, we do creative videos. The baptism videos, for example, in our worship services,
right?
Those are incredible.
Baptism in our church not only restates the win, essentially it gives us an opportunity to celebrate the win. And celebration is another way of restatement. And one of the things that we talk about a lot with church leaders is every church celebrates something. But again, if you don't bring alignment between your mission and your celebration, people pick up celebration as a point of direction. If this is what we celebrate, then let's do more of that. So one of the ways that you restate the win is by building times of celebration. And when we celebrate baptism, what are we celebrating? We're celebrating life change. And what is life change? Life change is the win.
Another thing that we do when we plan our productions or our meetings and we know that there's going to be a host in any kind of event is we script into what they say, statements, phrases, that will remind people what we're after, what we're trying to accomplish, to show illustrations to the audience of what a win is.
I know in our Married Life Live events, those are quarterly events for married couples, and we've decided there are six primary things that we're going to cover over and over and over. And the win for us is to clearly and compellingly communicate one of those things each event. That's the event. If at the end of the event we feel like we've taken an hour of time and we have clearly and in a compelling way communicated this one marriage principle and then give something to people to walk away thinking about, that's the win. Well, every time we have a Married Life event, what do? We say, here are the six statements. Tonight we're talking about this one, and then everything we do is built around the one. So again, it answers the question why we don't talk about a lot of other things. It answers the question, why don't you spend more time on this or that? Again, we've clarified the win, and we have built into the scripting of the evening, here's why we're here, here's what we're hoping to accomplish.
And you've got to remember, if you do the first two things, if you sum it up in a phrase, if you make it really specific, but you don't restate it, if it stops after the first two, don't expect your people to remember what a win is, because they'll forget.
They just go back to work. get busy.
All right, Reggie, number four, what do you mean by meet to clarify the win at every level?
Well, what I mean is that you can't stop at the top of the organization. The principle will only help you become more effective if the practice is carried through to the levels where practical ministry is happening. In other words, it's not enough to ask, what does a win look like for the church? It's not enough to ask, what does a win look like for the student ministry? It's not even enough to ask, what does a win look like for the inside-out high school program? You got to keep pushing down until you get to, okay, what does a win look like for the inside-out small group time?
That's right. The people who are leading the smallest component of any ministry, they need to know what a win is for them as well. If they don't, even at that level, they're going to define success for themselves, and consequently, you're in trouble. And again, you know, if a senior pastor is listening to this, I know your thoughts are like, good grief, this will take forever. I mean, you know, it took us 3 months to come up with a mission statement. If we have to go through that same tedious exercise at every level in the organization, we don't have time for that. I would say you don't have time not to, because 5 years from now, you will have spent 5 years worth of time doing ministry, and 5 years from now, you'll have something to show for it. And I guarantee you, if you invest the time up front to clarify the win with your staff, and again, you drive it to where every new ministry, every old ministry answers the question, what is the win? What do we want to look back on? What is the thing we want to accomplish? What is the thing we want to celebrate? It is time consuming. But when you come up with that phrase, when you come up with the bullseye on the target, then incredible things happen. And again, alignment is just a part of that.
And like we said, it's going to be determined one way or the other. You can determine it, or it will be determined for you.
Well, that's exactly right, Lane.
And it will be worth every penny in your organization to plan an offsite with your staff, to spend as much time as you need to push at this until it's done. Because once it's done, it's done.
Right.
And it will save you countless dollars. It will save you a lot of energy, and it will give you a lot more momentum.
And the other thing it will do, Reggie, in those meetings, you will discover the people who aren't really on your team. Because 8 out of 10 people in the meeting will say, yep, that's the bullseye. And there will be a couple of people that no matter what everybody else says, all of a sudden it becomes evident they're not really here to do what we are here to do. Because clarifying the win surfaces people with other agendas. And as a senior pastor, or as a ministry leader or department director, we've got to know who they are. Otherwise, we end up expending all kinds of sideways energy to drag people in a direction they really don't want to go.
We found out early on before we started this process that with a general mission statement, there are people out there who can just about make anything fit if they want to make it fit.
Oh, yeah.
And they'll bring, I mean, we've people brought in all sorts of things. They said, oh, this is leading people into a growing relationship with Christ.
And they were right.
And they were. We thought, well, yeah, but, you know. And so, but the more they dug down and we drove them down to really clarifying that win at every level, like you said, Andy, most of those people ended up going away. Some of them starting it on their own, and it was great things, but it didn't fit here in our organization. All right, we've talked about clarifying the win for the various areas and then digging down to every level, but let's face it, all of these things are driven by and run by people, staff members.
Right.
What role does clarifying the win play in helping a staff person to really understand what they're doing and what a win is for them?
Well, this is something I love to talk about, because not only do we have to clarify the win for programs and environments, I think as a leader, my responsibility is to clarify the win for the staff members themselves. And one of the things that I did a few years ago, and this took me forever, and senior pastors always want a copy, and I never give them a copy because it just took too much time to just give this away. I sat down for our leadership team and came up with a one-sentence job description. In other words, if you forget everything else, from my perspective, here is the win for you. And this was an incredibly helpful exercise for me, and hopefully, I mean, you guys are part of the team, hopefully set clear expectations for you, because a job description usually is a page or 2 pages or 3 pages, and anybody can pick up the parts of their job they want to do.
Right.
But I think as a leader, it's important for me to clearly communicate to everybody who answers to me, what is the win from my perspective? And I tell you what, I think probably half or more of the conflict between senior pastors and their staff would be eliminated if up front in the hiring process, or even now after you've been there 3 or 4 years, there was a conversation and you said to your senior pastor, okay, in one sentence, clarify the when. As the student minister, what is the when from your perspective? As the family minister, what is the when from your perspective? Clarify the when for me personally, and then I will set my agenda accordingly, and then there won't be this disconnect, and we have staff members, again, in their minds being successful, and the senior pastor's at home grumbling to his wife about, you know, why can't we get the music guy to do this or that? Well, hey, it's probably because you never clarified the when. I'll give you a couple of examples, but I won't go through all these. Bill Willits oversees all of our small group ministry. His one-sentence job description is to create and give leadership to an expanding network of adult small groups. That's it. If he wants to know what I'm looking for, to create and give leadership to an expanding network of adult small groups. That's his one-sentence job description. For Julie Arnold, who oversees all of our production, her one-sentence job description is to create an unforgettable experience for those who attend our worship services. Mm-hmm. That's it. At the end of the day, you know, if people walk out and say, wow, then hey, that's a win. I want her to help me and help me help her create an unforgettable experience in her Sunday morning worship services. And so again, hopefully she knows what the win is. And you know, there's lots of details, but that's the win.
And it might be a revelation for some senior pastors if they sat down with their staff and before they suggested what they thought the win was, asked their staff, okay, what do you think a win for you is?
Yep. I never forget a story. Bruce Wilkinson, he tells it a lot about, he called a guy in to fire him. Have you heard the story?
Yeah, yeah.
He was so dissatisfied with his employee, he called him in to fire him. And in the conversation, the kid started telling him all the stuff he was doing. And Bruce says he ended up giving him a raise.
Yeah.
Well, there was a disconnect in terms of expectations, but the kid was knocking it out of the park from his perspective. But again, you know, this is such a common thing in any organization, but it doesn't need to be. If leaders will simply clarify the win programmatically and in terms of their expectations for staff.
All right, Reggie, what do you say to the guy who's sitting out there wondering how to start?
I would say you take your calendar out and you block some days, some quality time with your staff, and you make it a priority, and you get your staff off somewhere where they will not be interrupted, where they can focus on what they do. You take a board and you put up on the board the major environments that you create or the major programs that you do. And then you spend time with your team defining what a win is for those programs so that everyone's on the same page.
And you might even want to take somebody outside the organization with you.
Great idea.
You know, I've learned that there are people who are great at facilitating these kinds of conversations and there are people who aren't. And depending on a senior pastor's relationship with his staff, there are some things that the staff may want to say that they won't say unless somebody else asks them in front of a senior pastor. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
And if there has not been a clear win for some time in your organization, I guarantee you there is frustration among your staff. I guarantee you. Because no competent leader can work without frustration in an environment where the win isn't clear. So if you've been going for a while, you have a mission statement, but you sense the disconnect, the lack of momentum, some isolation in terms of some departments, then chances are it would be wise to bring someone else in to facilitate this conversation, to pull out of your staff their frustrations so that at the end of the day, you haven't simply spent time together and they don't go home going, well, I wish I could have said and what I really thought. You know, you got to get it all out on the table. And sometimes a facilitator can make that a more meaningful time.
And when your meeting is over, when your offsite is done, just remember, it's not done and it's not over. You have to go back and figure out how to creatively keep this in front of everyone to communicate it over and over again so they don't forget it.
And then you have to find points of celebration along the way. And one of the things that you'll hear us talk about pretty often on this series is our Monday morning staff meetings where I open it up and say, hey, what happened yesterday, that would be Sunday, or last week, that made you feel like you were successful in doing what you came here to do. And that's our staff's opportunity to celebrate the win. So we hear stories about groups. We hear stories about evangelism. We hear stories about chance meetings. We hear stories about volunteer involvement. We hear stories about people cross-departmentally supporting others. Well, see, those are stories of the win in each of those departments. It allows us to reinforce those and, again, restate the value of why we're doing what we're doing.
Andy and Reggie, I want to thank you guys for joining me today, and I want to thank those of you listening as well. If you'd like more information on the 7 Practices of Effective Ministry, they're all detailed in a book from Multnomah Press, available at this website. For other resources from North Point Ministries, please go to northpoint.org.